Our star guest today is a musical director, a vocal coach, an orchestra conductor, and record producer. Michael Levine attended Columbia University, where he graduated with a BA in 1983. He's over here in the UK, and I thought it's about time that we caught up with him. Michael Levine in a restaurant somewhere in London. Welcome to the programme.
Thank you so much, Andrew. Happy to be here.
Michael, what brings you over to the UK at the moment then?
I'm on holiday here. Just been here for around 10 days, seeing theater and seeing friends and having a lovely time.
Michael, let's talk about your history, though. You've done so much in your life, but where did this fascination and interest in music and performing come from? Were you born in a musical family?
I was. My mom played piano, and my father played clarinet and sax in the big band in the 1940s. So I was steeped in music from a very young age, and I just kept pursuing it and studying piano and doing shows eventually with my parents at their condo in Maryland, SITC, Washington, D.C. And so it's been in my blood.
Michael, you mentioned there that you started off playing the piano. Do you play any other instruments at the moment?
No, not at the moment. I played clarinet when I was a kid, but I haven't played that in many, many years. It's just to keep quite busy on the piano.
When you talk about being a musical director, a vocal coach, an orchestra conductor, and a record producer, how do you balance all that?
Wherever the work comes, wherever and whatever I get the calls for, I can do, which is great because it opens when you can do many things involving the piano or involving teaching. I give piano lessons. I work as a coach with singers, helping them prepare for auditions. I work on cabaret acts with students, helping them find material, working on the performance of them, and play the cabaret act. At the auditions, dance classes, so many things you can do as a pianist that whatever comes up, I tend to take and try not to, if I get so busy that I have to farm out the job to other people and I love recommending my friends for jobs, just like I like being recommended myself. I mean, my main thing is I have one of the larger privately held collections of sheet music in the world. So people come to me, I get around 10, 15 requests a day from around the world looking for that piece of sheet music they can't find. And that's pretty much the full-time thing, more than any of the piano things or coachings or teachings or anything like that. Yeah, and I have an assistant who helps me with that. And I sell a lot of the duplicates I have on eBay, and that's 800 things on eBay. So they've been selling really, really well, which has been great. I just like sharing. I like sharing wonderful things. When people say, do you have this obscure song? And I go, oh, I love that song. Here's a copy of it. But they can't find it. A lot of things that are out of print, things you can't find, or things that were never published. So I love sharing that with people.
What was it then that prompted you to start collecting sheet music in the first place? Because it's obviously a passion that you've got, but maybe a passion not everybody would think of starting.
Sure. When I was a kid, when I started college at Columbia in New York City, I would go to the sheet music. Back then, there were shops that sold sheet music. There were far fewer than there were back then. And I would go there and say, oh, I want to get a copy of this, a copy of that, and buy the new sheet music that came out. And eventually I spent time at the Library of Congress in Washington, D.C., where they have, you know, hundreds of thousands of pieces of sheet music. And I would copy various composers' works, all the Harold Arlen or Frank Lesser, Julie Stein, and get things that were unpublished and handwritten. And I've inherited a lot of collections, world-class collections from composers, private collectors and everything like that. So it just keeps growing in leaps and bounds to the point that it's totally outgrown my apartment and the storage room downstairs in my building. And I just have to figure out, that's why getting rid of the duplicates will give me a lot more room. Thank goodness.
Give you a chance to start again and get even more, Michael.
Which unfortunately I did today, because there's a wonderful bookshop called the Archive Bookstore on Bell Street off the Edgware Road here in London. And they've been around for, gosh, 50 years. And I've been going there for many years, going back over 35 years. And they have an incredible collection of old sheet music. Thousands and thousands. And I just spent a good hour and a half there buying £100 worth of music. But God bless him, he took 50% off. So it was only £50. But it was a lot of old sheets of fascinating things like Lawrence Harvey, you know, the wonderful English actor Lawrence Harvey.
Yeah.
He played King Arthur in Camelot in the West End. And this was a piece of sheet music with Lawrence Harvey's name, not Richard Burton's, which is, of course, very rare and hard to find. Things like that that you're looking for, you never know. I found a book here many years ago called The Sound of Edna. And it was Dame Edna dressed up like in The Sound of Music, but it was the Dame Edna songbook. And it was like £5. And I said, okay, I need that. I also did a show by Vivian Ellis. Vivian Ellis was a contemporary of Gershwin who wrote shows in the 30s, 40s. This was in 1996, a show of his called Listen to the Wind. I was doing it at the King's Head with starring Paula Wilcox, even though the TV star, Paula Wilcox. And we made a CD of it, actually, at Abbey Road with John Yap. Wonderful. And I met with Vivian. Vivian was a champion of mine. He was 90 years old, and we had a wonderful time. And then I went to this my little shop, and I just stumbled upon the original published score, this obscure musical from 1954 called Listen to the Wind. Nobody's ever seen this score. It was £4. I should have gone right over to Vivian's and gotten him to sign it, but I went home, and by the time I got back to London, Vivian had passed away, but later that year. But that show was originally done at Oxford, and the chorus people were the winds, the north wind, the south wind, the east wind, and the west wind was played by the 18-year-old college student at Oxford at the time, that great musical comedy star, Maggie Smith. Yes, she was in Listen to the Wind. And she even was interviewed. Somebody told me there was an interview with a bunch of dames with like Eileen Atkins and somebody else. And she started talking about Listen to the Wind because somebody else famous was in it also back in the day. It was funny.
And this sheet music is really something you can hold that will speak to you of the history of the music, of the shows, and as you said then, Michael, of the people who were actually appearing at the time. And in the example of Maggie Smith, before she got anywhere near as famous as she was towards the end of her life.
Well, you just hit on it, Andrew. That's what I like. I like turning actual pages. Today, a lot of the kids playing music play it from their iPads and they download it online. I like having actual books to turn pages. When I'm doing a show that I've Xeroxed, I want to Xerox pieces of paper that I can turn the pages and watch them. It's just much better. And seeing the names and having, whenever somebody comes to my apartment who was in a show I have the selections for, I said, would you mind signing this score, the selections? And I was friends with Sheldon Harnick and Hugh Martin, who wrote Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas, and Sondheim, and got a lot of them to sign my sheet music over the years. It's wonderful because that's a thrill for me to have it all signed. Bonnie Langford, of course, signed my Gypsy with Angela Lansbury selections and got Angela to sign it for me too. And also signed my Gone with the Wind. She was in a musical version of Gone with the Wind in 1974, 72, I don't know.
What an astonishing collection, and something, Michael, as you say, you've now got room to add to with your extra £100 worth that you've spent while you've been over here in the UK.
Well, only £50. He gave it to me for half price, yeah.
We've talked a bit about the work you've done with musical directing, but what I'm really interested in is to talk about your work as an orchestra conductor, because I can get my head around being a musical director, maybe in a cabaret, and we've spoken to people on the program before now who you've actually directed. But what is it like when you then make that move to be an orchestra conductor where you've got so many more moving pieces?
Well, the orchestra conductor is the epitome of being an MD or a musical director on a show. You're a musical director and you rehearse with the cast, and sometimes you play, sometimes you have a repetiteur to play piano for you during rehearsals while you're, you know, either conducting in the rehearsal, just conducting the piano and the singer and making sure it's easy to get in and out of the songs, if there's a vamp you need to work on. And then you finally have a rehearsal on your own without the cast with the orchestra. And then they have what they call a zitz probe, where you go through the songs on the stage with perhaps with lights, perhaps not, but with the actors and with the full orchestra. And then finally you have an actual dress rehearsal and performances with the orchestra. And I tell you, it is such a thrill to play a show and know that you need to know the orchestration fairly well, because you need to know how to bring in the brass or bring in the clarinets when they're coming in. So it's a very clean entrance. I've kind of trial by fire when I first started conducting. Noticed when I was a little sloppy with my conducting, they didn't really come in cleanly. And I knew you have to be really sharp. And then I saw how nice it sounds when they come in really together. It's really great. I did How to Succeed, which was a 22 piece orchestra, and it was just such a thrill conducting, looking up and seeing 22 pieces, and they're all eyes on me and watching it. And the other end of the spectrum, I did around a 15 piece orchestration with The Little Mermaid, which was incredibly fun, but you know, different kind of music than How to Succeed, which is great. I mean, nothing wrong with Little Mermaid. I think it's also a great score, but I love the opportunity to conduct. I know people who do it full time, 52 weeks a year, and I think it's great. I have less of a desire to pursue it for Broadway or anything like that as than I did when I was growing up, at least being in the pit, because I've sat in the pit for Broadway shows, and it's just very, you're very detached because you don't really hear the singers. You just hear the music through a speaker, and you have to watch the conductor, and just very clinical. And I thought, that's not, doesn't interest me as much. In fact, I don't really pursue the conducting thing as much anymore, because I enjoy being one-on-one with a singer and being able to do an act and play with them. Or I do a lot of shows at 54 Below, the cabaret space in New York City, where often I'm hosting, and if not, I am MDing, is the directing, at the piano. And sometimes I sing from some of the songs. Sometimes I play for other people. Christine Petty and I have a series there called The Wicked Stage, which is as in Life Upon the Wicked Stage from the show book, where we do songs. We have four fairly famous guest stars, and they each sing two songs about some permutation of show business. It could be rather tangential, but it's really fun. We just did our seventh concert over the past 4 or 5 years. And it's really a lot of fun doing that kind of thing, being able to just be an MD. I get up and sing a couple of songs at those shows, but being able to be a host, and honestly, I think I'm a good host. We did a 100th birthday celebration of Sammy Davis Jr. with Ben Vereen and Keith David, wonderful, wonderful performers, Norm Lewis. And that was really exciting too.
Mentioning the great Sammy Davis Jr., as you did then, it got me thinking that the shows that you're putting on that are tribute shows, they have to be done so carefully, don't they, to really respect the integrity of the performer, but also to celebrate them as well. And I guess there's quite a personal angle when you are preparing a show that is particularly about one person.
Right, we do. Like the Sammy Davis Jr., I had two producer friends who decided, went to 54 Below and said, we'd like to celebrate his 100th birthday. And we started the show after the opening number. We had Ben Vereen sitting in the audience, and he got on the phone with Liza Minnelli and talked to the audience. He talked to the audience with some stories about Sammy Davis Jr. It was exciting to celebrate somebody like that. I also celebrated Henry Mancini. His 100th birthday was last year. I did a wonderful concert I was very proud of, with lots of great people celebrating Henry Mancini and his music. Wonderful songs. Yeah, great.
And people really leave those venues with a spring in their step and having learnt a little bit about the person that they thought they knew.
I like to believe that. I try to, they're very tight on time. Most of these concerts require us to be no longer than 75 minutes, and we have a lot of performers. And I also have narration. I need to introduce the performers and the songs. But at the same time, as you say, I want to tell them a little about Sammy Davis Jr. or Henry Mancini or whoever I'm presenting. So I'm trying to do that as quickly and painlessly as possible. But yes, I think they will leave, not only be thoroughly entertained, but know a little more about the performer or the composer. Yeah.
When you look back on how you were when you were very young, what do you think that your young self would think if he could look forward and see what you have actually achieved in your life?
I think I started out more or less as an actor. I wanted to be acting. And I think when I was a kid, I went to an audition for Little Shop of Horrors, and I saw around five Seymours in the room. And I think I got so nervous, I didn't even audition. So I thought, I can still, the way my career has worked out, I can still sing at auditions, sing in shows, and even act occasionally. And yet I realized I was good at the piano, and I was getting a lot more money and a lot more work as a pianist. Something my young self would say, just go with the flow. You'll make a lot more money. Be happy as a pianist. You're good at it. You know how to play, you know, to accompany singers. Accept that. You'll have enough money to be able to go to London every once in a while and stay in a nice hotel. And I travel the world, actually. I travel quite a bit. In the old days, every place I would go, I would try to find a conservatory and do some teaching. I've been to Australia many, many, many times over a 15-year period, twice a year, teaching at all the conservatories there. But I've kind of soured on that a little bit. And now I'm just traveling just to travel. Like this year alone, I've been to Bolivia, Brazil, Chile, Antarctica, which is amazing, and to Portugal. I did Portugal for 10 days a month ago. So I just travel because it's fun, and I can go and travel and see the world.
I can tell by the smile on your face that you are really living your best life, Michael.
You got me talking about it. So talking about it, you got me all excited thinking about what I do and how much I enjoy doing what I do.
Well, I'm very pleased that we've certainly put a smile on your face. Michael, what are you planning on doing next, either on your trips and your travels or professionally?
Well, actually, it's very, very soon. So soon that the actors are chomping at the bit to start rehearsing. That's at 54 Below, and it's celebrating Lerner and Lowe. I think it's the 70th anniversary of My Fair Lady, so we're going to do a concert with some wonderful Broadway stars, Robert Cuccioli, who starred as Jekyll and Hyde on Broadway, and Meg Bussert, and and Martin Vidnovic, who starred in Brigadoon on Broadway. So it's really going to be a exciting concert of Lerner and Lowe, both all the well-known stuff from Camelot and Brigadoon, Paint Your Wagon and My Fair Lady, but also stuff from their earlier shows, which is nice to, I like to, you know, to spread the wealth and show people some of the songs they may not, maybe less likely to know. I'm also doing a concert next month of Dames at Sea, which is the old 1968 musical. It originally starred Bernadette Peters when she was 18 years old. And we're doing a concert at 54 Below featuring, again, some people from the original production, like the wonderful Kirk Peterson and Lonnie Ackerman, names some Broadway talents would know. And that's going to be also at 54 Below. And that's going to be very exciting, too, celebrating a show that's got a great score that people love. It's a very small-scale show, but I'm very excited about it. I think it'll be a lot of fun.
Kurt Peterson has been on this program himself, so it's lovely to get a name check for him.
Oh, Kurt Peterson was on your show? Yeah. Oh, I love Kurt. That's great. Yeah. I'll discuss it with him.
Michael, can I wish you all the very best for the shows you've got coming up?
Thank you so much, Andrew. That means a lot to me. I really am so happy this worked out, that we were able to do this.
And I will now let you go back, Michael, and finish off your chicken and chips or whatever it is you're having.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Look at us, we're together. Though the world is immense, something gave us the sense to meet. Look at us, here together, and together we'll stick, proving truth has got fiction beat. Now in every story of love, my faith is complete. It's true, what do you know, it's true. Every romantic word I've heard is really true. Yes, true, stories that I've read through must have been based on fact and backed by those who knew. For I just happened by, like in a book, one look and I blink my eyes. Surprise, I was looking at you. Oh, what a lovely view. All the old doubts can go, 'cause now I know it's true. In a book, one look and I blinked my eyes. Surprise, I was looking at you. Oh, what a lovely view. All the old doubts can go, 'cause now I know it's true.
Michael Levine. Yes, Michael.